Fortunately, whatever idiot did this used a bad kind of paint. The cold weather, if you want to look for a silver lining in cold weather, helped, and it's coming off.
Just completely disrespectful. I mean, I feel that the youth these days are not educated in what these monuments really stand for.
We told him what we would like to see in the throne speech. We told him what we expected based on the fact, the support our party got in the last election.
We beat predictions by more than 3 times the highest estimate that I saw during the campaign. Nobody thought it was even possible to get close to a 7 million number. 2 million was maxed out if you were lucky and if you did a great job.
You're listening to The Rush with Ryan Doyle and Jay Mad Dog Michaels on News Talk 1010.
I always expect Donald Trump to announce a casino opening right after he says almost anything. And that's why I'm happy to be here at my latest casino. It never happens. Maybe the next few years. Welcome back. It is hour number 2 of The Rush. Wow, I'm having a deja vu moment. I'm looking at the mayor on television right now, and I'm looking at the mayor right in front of me. It's a bit strange.
Which is better?
I think
neither
you
one.
You look absolutely wonderful in human def as well as high def.
I run into people seriously all the time. Like if I told you twice a week, 3 times a week, and they say, you look much better than you do on television. I look at them, I go, well, what does that mean I look like on television?
Wait, what are you seeing?
Exactly. But they say television, as you know, because you guys now have a daily appearance, I guess, on CP24.
Right.
And
yep.
It does sort of add weight, as it were.
Well, what's the old saying?
Especially without makeup.
The old saying from Friends was, you know, you do know the camera adds 5 pounds. And then Joey says to Monica, how many cameras were on you?
I forgot about that.
That, of course, is Mayor John Tory. It's Ryan and Jay. We are The Rush. 416-872-1010. You can text the show at 71010. Right out of the gate, I noticed that you walked out without your boot, much like a person who finally paid off all their traffic tickets. You are now bootless.
I am bootless.
Moving on your own steam.
Moving on my own steam, but at limited speed.
Right.
And I'm working up to the Santa Claus parade this weekend, so I may have the assistance of a golf cart because I'm supposed to not overdo it.
That's probably a good one.
And they told me with this Achilles thing, it's a year recovery in total. So walking in a Santa Claus parade, which I did 4 times last year with a boot on, they said that probably caused my surgery to occur.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going
to. So I'll be there.
But, I don't think anyone's going to hold that against you if you don't walk the entire route.
Oh, you never know. Somebody will find a reason.
Well, that's
to.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. They'll start telling you now.
They probably already started texting
it's
in. You guys don't. They don't.
Can't
ladies and
the
gentlemen, you should
walking.
Know, I don't see the text board anymore because they say, well, you know, you shouldn't see these. There
it's
might be some secrets on them, but it's the vile thing that people are sending.
I can't believe Ryan reads it.
Are you sure he does?
Oh, he does. Oh.
When you walked in, I told you that I had just got my water testing kit from the city, and you have some interesting numbers on that because there was a big expose, and a number of media organizations did some talk and some research into lead in water. Now, Toronto doesn't have a problem, and you were right to tell people about that, but people are getting their water tested.
It has a much smaller problem than it used to, and a smaller problem than many other cities. But they had demand for about 1,000. That was as of the end of last week, in a 1 week period. And normally they'd give out a few hundred over the course of the entire year. So every time this gets a burst of publicity, people come in to get tested, and of course the kits are free. People can go and pick them up relatively easily. So it's just people who don't think that that's something that applies to them until they read one of these write-ups. And so I'm glad the write-ups happen because it means people then do go and get tested. And I think most of them will discover they do not have a problem. But we want to find out if there are people who do.
Yeah, and it was one of those things. I thought 311 was quite helpful with the way they register you for it, and they ask you, was your house built before 1950 something? And mine was. I think mine's about 100 years old. So you get to the next steps, and then you go pick up your little.
Did you have to get 3 or 4 kits though? Given the size of the place, you probably had to have like multiple. Well, Jay, it's one of those, it takes about a half an hour to drive by it, I think. I hear.
I've been to his house.
But this is coming from you. Come on. This is not even close to fair.
To be fair, his home is almost.
Now he's talking fair.
His home is almost the exact same size as the cabana at your cottage.
Let's get on to the real issues.
My house is north of Bloor. I don't want you to get a nosebleed or anything, Mr.
No, I used to live up there. What are you talking about?
That's true.
I lived there for most of my life.
All right.
Want to talk about the Remembrance Day events that took place yesterday at City Hall. And I think despite the weather, I think maybe because of the weather, it took on a bit of a different tone with all of that snow falling. Certainly well attended. I thought what was said by everyone was probably tone perfect. And then you have the incident today. And how can you not feel just a little bit disappointed in the city today when something like that happens?
I always comfort myself when it comes to these kinds of things. in knowing that it is one completely off-balance individual who did that. And I'm sure the person maybe has some grievance, but there's so many different ways you can take your grievance up other than to go and deface the monument in our city that honors the war did the day after Remembrance Day. Any day would have been bad, but this was about the worst day short of Remembrance Day itself that this guy could have picked. So I just hope they track him down, and I'm really glad we have these. I didn't know until today the things you don't know. We have two, it's a private company, we have two trucks that basically go around the city all day. I wish I could remember their name or I'd give them a plug.
Graffiti.
Goodbye Graffiti.
I drove
okay,
by
good
them
for
today. Ryan, yeah,
I and I talked to the guys and I thanked them for their hard work. That's and great. They were telling me all about what they do. But they go around the city all the time. Like, they're basically full-time on contract to us, taking graffiti off places where it shouldn't be. And so today, thank goodness they were there. They had the right kind of soap. They said that it had helped a lot, that it was cold weather and that the particular kind of paint hadn't yet had time to sort of seep into the stone, because right. the longer you leave it, the harder it can be to get it off. And so they were quite optimistic about being able to have the monument look relatively normal before long. But honest to God, you know, I just heard one of the clips at the beginning of the hour two here that I just think there's sort of a general breakdown. And I don't, somebody was attributing it to young people. I don't think it's young people. I think just people have decided, and I'm not sure where social media influences this or not, but people have just decided they don't have to be civilized to each other on the road anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be civilized to each other, you know, in stores, in lineups, they'll elbow somebody out of the way, or they'll, the extreme is they'll do something like this. It's just, you know, even the people who will carry a gun, you know, like, people just do that now. Whereas, you know, many, many years ago, you would have thought, well, who would ever carry a gun except for the really hardcore,
sure,
you know, criminals. So I lament.
I also think the mirror image of that, and I see this every day because I try and live my life this way, is I see kindness in this city every single day. I see people giving tourists directions. I see people, I was getting off my bus last night, and there was a bus on the other side of the street, a gentleman who was visually impaired, three people at the front of the bus making sure that he was okay getting across the street. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me positive and hopeful.
Right. It's actually true. Tomorrow is some kind of kindness day, and because I issue these things that said tomorrow's kindness day, and it's about sort of that sort of thing. And I think you're right. But, and you know, when we have tragedies, the number of people who come forward on the, you know, the GoFundMe,
yeah,
and raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for people that are strangers to them and so on. You're right. But I think maybe we've got the two extremes. We've got a lot of kind people, but then we have more of these kind of idiotic people
who do
stuff like derange a monument.
Can we get back to the scumbag for a second who decided to do something like this? Do we have any surveillance down there?
Yes. In fact, I looked when I was there today just to go over and thank the guys that were cleaning it up. And there's a camera right up above it. And it's one of those ones, the cameras go around, I think, 360. So I would bet they'll have some pretty good video of whoever did this. Now, the question I said to the guys, I said, well, the question will be whether the guy was smart enough to cover his face or not. Because if he didn't, there's a camera right there. And so they'll have some video, but I suspect they're not saying much about that just because they may be on to, a description of who did it.
Interesting, because I think the first question a lot of our listeners had was about security, about surveillance, because those are important monuments. And if they're targets at some point, you want that kind of security available.
Yeah, and I think that camera's there not because of that monument necessarily, but because that's one of the busiest intersections in the city and because it's in front of a courthouse. That's what the old City Hall is. And it's a very busy intersection, so my guess is that's why the camera's there. But hopefully they'll have something from it, because I would just throw the book at this person and just say, come on. I mean, like, this is, ordinarily it would be like vandalism or mischief as
harder
a charge.
Harder sentence for something like this?
I just think you have to send a message. This kind of stuff is just completely unacceptable. I mean, it's why I say the same thing about bail. I mean, how many chances do you get? I'm a big second chance guy. More so than Jerry Hagar might be.
Yeah.
But, how many chances do you get? How many?
It's Ryan and Jay here on The Rush. Toronto Mayor John Tory, our guest for the hour. A lot to get to this afternoon. One of the just tragic stories over the last couple of days, over the last 24 hours, has to do with a 2-year-old girl who lost her life when she was hit by an air conditioning unit that fell from the window of an eighth floor apartment building in Scarborough. Now, this is a TCHC building that we're talking about. It's our understanding that the landlord had gone around and said to everybody, if you want to trade out those units, you can, for a unit that would be inside the dwelling as opposed to in the window. It's city run. So will there be a review now of these air conditioning units in all TCHC facilities given this tragedy?
Well, certainly starting with this one, because this is an unspeakable tragedy. Talk about a freak accident, but I think we owe it to all the people in Toronto, but to that family and in particular to the people in that building to find out what happened. Why was that air conditioning unit loose enough or you know, being moved or whatever was going on with it. So I don't know the answer to that question, but I can assure you there is a complete investigation underway and that whatever steps need to be taken to make sure that never happens again will be taken. But I just don't know the circumstances at all as to, you know, how it came to fall like that. It's just, it's unbelievably tragic.
It seems kind of dangerous when you look at it in retrospect that you'd have a unit like this. I mean, we don't know whether or not it was installed properly. You would think that if it fell out the window, the assumption would be that it wasn't. Is it worth reviewing this in all buildings then? As you say, starting with this one, but, you know, if this is a bigger problem, should we not be looking at it?
I have no doubt, Ryan, that if the findings of this particular investigation show that there is some kind of a shortcoming in terms of the safety aspects of even if properly installed, because you have to assume sometimes that things are going to be improperly installed. And if that leads to a danger that a unit's going to fall out of a building and fall 8 stories or 10 stories or 2 stories down on top of somebody, then you've got to look at the whole thing across the city. Fortunately, these window units are becoming less prevalent as they are replaced by in apartment units or by even central air conditioning. But having said all that, I can just assure the public that the investigation is being done, mm-hmm. that the results will be taken up by TCHC, and that I'm sure any lessons that need to be learned across the city will be learned and implemented.
Because I think, you know, what troubled me was the idea that there was a choice. I would have thought that something like this, if you're even giving people the option, you're basically saying one's safer than the other. Why not make it mandatory?
Well, and that's why you have to know what happened here. I mean, was a contractor in from the building actually altering the air conditioning? Was the resident altering the air conditioning? Had the air conditioning just been waiting to fall for 2 months and it happened to fall at that terrible time on top of that child? There's no good time. But so these are the questions that have to get answered. And that's the first thing you have to do before you, you know, decide to launch a citywide safety blitz or, you know, change a procedure or put an additional. I think there is some requirement now for these units when you have them, anybody, that you are supposed to tether them so they can't fall out. Mm-hmm. I remember we had back in the day a window air conditioning, and I was always terrified it was going to fall.
I think that all the time when I go by buildings.
Yeah, so, when the report's available, we'll talk about it then.
Let's stick with TCHC and specifically an announcement that was made recently about a changeover for a couple of buildings that are going to be torn down where there's 120 rent geared to income units. They're going to be replaced by a really ambitious project, 103 rent geared to income units, 17 income apartments operated by a nonprofit, 100 affordable rentals, 180 rental apartments at market rental rates, and 350 condos. This is a massive project. Is this sort of the new model as we move forward to try and increase housing across the city?
Yes, it's the model we used in Regent Park, where, again, what we're trying to create, unlike what they did 50 or 60 years ago, in hindsight is always 2020, they created an exclusive neighborhood of people who are in social housing. We've discovered over time that doesn't work. What you want to create is mixed income communities. You want to renew them so you have newer buildings. Everybody has newer buildings. And so we've done it in Regent Park. We're doing it in Lawrence Heights. We're doing it in Alexandra Court. And now we're going to be doing it out Queen East. The objective is to do as many of these as we can, but you need to have a private sector or nonprofit partner in order to make it happen. You'll notice what's happening is we're getting the new rent geared to income units, in other words, Toronto Community Housing units, at no expense to the city. Why? Because the developer, which is a company called Context, a really excellent socially conscious developer called Howard Cohen, is going to make enough money off the condos to effectively construct the new housing for TCHC. So that's the model you have to have. You need somebody who's going to put something in that is going to make some money that will subsidize the cost of the stuff that doesn't make any money.
Also, this is win-win for a developer mm-hmm. who is in a prime location mm-hmm. in this city. So
yes, I think they will make money on the condos ways. Even after they pay for the TCHC.
Right.
I mean, you know, developers are not in the business of
losing
charity.
Money.
No.
Yeah.
So they will make money. The city gets new, renewed TCHC housing. The tenants get brand new housing because we're guaranteeing them they can move back in after they move out to have the demolition take place. So it's a winning formula, which we have done at Regent Park. We have done it at Lawrence Heights, or we're in the process of doing it in both places with fabulous results. And that's why we're trying to replicate it. So any developer who wants to come in and make a proposal with regard to TCHC lands where they could do something similar to this, we are all ears.
Is it a bigger challenge, though, in areas where it's not as palatable for the developer? Because there are TCHC buildings in neighborhoods where the developer might not want any part of that.
But you know what, Ryan? What's interesting in Toronto now is that the price of housing is such, the availability or lack of availability of land is such, the transit that we're constructing now and will construct in the future is such that almost every area of the city becomes mm-hmm. desirable enough that somebody will come forward and say, I could make you a deal like this. So that's why I'm issuing the invitation, because I think you'd find that people want to build all over the city now, because this is a very attractive place to live. And I don't say that just because I'm the mayor. I just came back from New York 2 days last week, convincing, I think we met 14 companies, convincing them to do business and invest here. And I can just tell you, the Toronto story is out there. It is not as well known as it needs to be, but it's a very positive story, notwithstanding our problems. And that, and there's 70,000 people coming here every year. They have to have somewhere to live.
Don Cherry, who, of course, made a lot of headlines over the last, 72 hours now. Of course, he was fired yesterday from his job at Rogers Sportsnet. He's no longer the host of Coach's Corner with Ron McLean. He was on last night with Barb DiGiulio, actually, in an exclusive radio interview that she did towards the end of her program. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
I still feel that everybody in this country that likes our way of life, these beautiful people, gave their lives in their 20s and in their teens for our way of life. They should wear a poppy. And if that's offensive, then there's nothing I can do about it. That's the way I feel, and I'm not changing, and I don't regret a thing.
Now, he does say in a subsequent interview with CTV News that will air in the 6 o'clock news this afternoon that he didn't use the word regret, but he did say if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't have used the term those people or these people when he was part of doing the broadcast. You used to work in media. You used to run a big company, Rogers. Would you have canned him?
I think the result here was the correct result, because my understanding was from that wonderful interview that Barb DiGiulio did that they offered him a chance to, you know, make this right, and he chose not to accept that, which is his perfect right. But I think when he said no to that, they made the correct decision in saying that the time was up. Look, you know, as much as what he just said there, if he had just said on television, every Canadian should wear a poppy, I'd have been the first guy to line up and say, Don Cherry is absolutely right. Every Canadian should, if they possibly can, wear a poppy. That wasn't what he said. I mean, he talked about things that clearly implied he was talking about people who were immigrants, even to the point where he started saying that he could tell from looking around who was an immigrant and who wasn't. What does that mean? That's like that stuff that the guy came and said to Jagmeet Singh. If you just take that turban off your head, people think you're a swell fellow or whatever it was he said.
Yeah.
And Jagmeet Singh said to him correctly, well, you know, what does a Canadian look like? And so he made a mistake. And look, people make mistakes. It's not the first. But it's one of those mistakes nowadays when you have a platform as powerful as the one he had on Hockey Night in Canada, just like I do as mayor, you do as people that are a talk show host here on 1010, that you have a higher standard of care in what you say, and that it's going to cause more division and hurt if you say something inconsiderate, which he did, clearly. And he was even saying that this morning with Barbara. I heard it this morning, the interview last night, where he was sort of saying, you know, that he knew the minute he'd said it that he was surprised somebody didn't say something to him. Well, he clearly knew that he'd said something wrong, but he just didn't bother to fess up, as it were. And I think had he done that, you know, people still would have been upset, and I think with good reason, but he may have his job today. But anyway, it's done, and so on we go.
Jim Karagiannis removed as local city councillor for Ward 22 Scarborough Agent Court, and according to a release from the city, that his campaign overspent, including $32,083.50 on parties and other expressions of appreciation, nearly five times the limit. Now, as mayor, when something like this happens, how does it play out? How does it unfold? When are you made aware of something like this?
I was made aware. I was in New York, as I just mentioned, I think it was Friday afternoon, maybe Thursday, and I got a call from my chief of staff saying the city clerk had just said she was on his way to Councillor Karagiannis' office to tell him he was forfeiting his seat. And I said, I beg your pardon? And she said, he's on his way to his office to say he's out. And so my chief of staff took me through that. And the law reads that way. If you file a return that says you overspent in the manner that was suggested here, and now he says Councillor Karagiannis, or former councillor, was a clerical error, but on the face of it, it reported spending over the limit. And it just says, if you do that, you're out. And it seems like a very, cut and dried sort of thing.
I think what's interesting, Mr. Mayor, from the standpoint of just your average citizen, is how swift this seems to move.
Nothing seems to happen that fast.
Considering what happens in municipal politics,
look,
or provincial or federal.
Even I will agree with that, because when people ask me what's my greatest frustration in having this job, it's that whether it's a transit project or whether it's even something much simpler than a transit project, everything takes a long time. But having said that, the law is clear. And the law just says, if you file this document, you shall lose your seat. That's it. And so the clerk, once she'd had a chance to look at this return, and she didn't tell me all this, but I went to his office and just told him. And that's that. Like, there is no, you know, subject to an appeal, or you can have a hearing. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Karagiannis says as recently as, yesterday, that he was going to go to court. I guess he will. But other than that, the law is just one of those very black and white things that says, if you overspend, And see, the thing is, what's unusual in this case is that he had filed a return signed by himself and by his auditor saying these numbers are true, and the numbers said he overspent, so that it was very clear he'd signed a paper saying he overspent, and the law says if you overspend, you're out.
You're sort of validating your own your own expenditures.
Well, you've talked a little bit about bail. I know that Toronto's police chief, Mark Saunders, got quite upset about the need to discuss bail reform. We sent his comments actually to the Department of Justice last week. I'm going to read in part their reply. The Department of Justice is committed to helping keep Canadian families safe and secure while supporting victims of crime. While the criminal code is federal legislation, the administration of justice, which includes the prosecution of criminal code offenses and the development of bail protocols, is the responsibility of the provincial government. I will save everybody the rest of that statement, but it seems in the first paragraph of it, they turn right to the province and say, it's not really us here, it's the province you should be dealing with. What would be your response to that?
I'd say everybody's trying, but we're not anywhere near where we need to be. The province has tried by setting up a special court, so if you're charged with a firearms offense, you go to that bail court, and they strenuously try to avoid having you get out on bail. But let me just read you something from a Toronto Star article that was written on November the 6th. It says, the police said between August and September, the early phase of Project Community Space, police arrested 53 individuals who were on bail for firearms-related offenses. And then it goes on to say, the new charges laid against the 53 included assault, assault with a weapon, break and enter, possession of a firearm, drug offenses, robbery with violence, failing to comply. A spokesman said police couldn't provide a full breakdown of these charges each individual faced. This speaks to the point that I have been making and others, the police chief and others, which is that what you've got here is not just people getting out of bail. Of course, we couldn't possibly build enough prisons to have everybody who's charged with an offense staying in prison until their trial. And it's not right in any event. But when you have people that are charged over and over again, there was one person, three people that the police chief said during that Project Community Space time were let out on bail three times on firearms offenses. Like, when are we going to get this right?
Well, are the feds passing the buck here then?
Well, no, I think it's a team effort. I think the feds have to take another look at the law. And the province has to take a look at the administration of that law. But then there's the one other group that no one ever talks about. I'm not even supposed to as a lawyer, because then you're deemed to be disrespectful. And I'm saying it respectfully. The judges who make these decisions, the justices of the peace and the judges, I think have to take a look at this and listen to the community's voice in saying you do not let somebody out on bail a third time, especially. I would say not a second. Who's already out on a firearms charge on bail and gets charged again with a firearms offense. It is too much playing with the safety of people in our community to have that going on. So I think it's everybody, all hands on deck. Federal government, pass the laws. Provincial government, administer them. Judges, actually implement them in court.
More with Toronto Mayor John Tory when The Rush continues. Welcome back to The Rush, Ryan and Jay with your roundtable coming up at 5:45. John Pohl from The Pohl Position joining us, along with Savan Pelvetsian, the CEO of Civic Action, and Toronto Mayor John Tory, who joins us in studio for the duration of the hour.
Yeah. And we should mention, because we've got a lot of text messages over the last couple of weeks, and yes, it wasn't that I was ignoring anybody by any stretch, but our colleague Christy Blatchford from the National Post, who is on this show busting my chops every single day, which I absolutely love, she's currently undergoing treatment for cancer. And we've got a very nice page where you can send her a message and wish her well on our website at newstalk1010.com. That is why she hasn't been on the roundtable the last little while. And, of course, we can't wait till she's back,
yeah,
and we can't wait till she's back busting my chops all over again.
And she does that with regularity and with great dexterity.
Yes.
She's being sworn in, I think it was supposed to be this week or next, and to the News Hall of Fame,
which is something
for all the news people, I mean, it's a big honor. And I think her acceptance speech, I went to an award she got many years ago, 25 years ago, because when I was the head of Rogers Media, we owned the Toronto Sun at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to my first Toronto Sun Awards dinner, and she got up to accept some award. It was an annual thing they did. They got awards for best column,
right,
best story, and so on. And she got up, and as I recall, may inadvertently have dropped a couple of F-bombs. And
no,
made a couple,
not oh,
and
Christy.
It was a classic. And it was my first exposure. I'm thinking, gee, this place is fun.
Yeah,
you know, but it was Christy. I mean, she's such a wonderful and so smart and compassionate. And
we've
know.
Noticed that as well with Christy, is that that's a bit of a defense mechanism for Christy, because she doesn't like the praise.
No.
Like, if she could just, get the award in absentia, she'd probably get it most of the time that way.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So
she's
everybody,
the best,
of course,
and I hope everybody's got their fingers crossed for her.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, send her some well wishes.
She's a fighter too. That's the other thing, as you well know.
Totally.
So,
totally.
Good.
Let's talk a bit about the state of our city as we wake up today. A lot of people a little bit more sore from scraping, a little bit more sore from shoveling.
Was the city prepared for what we got yesterday? It felt like quite the wallop.
I had a group of grade 5 students in today, and you may say, well, what does that have to do with anything? They asked me questions for probably 20 minutes, and they asked the best questions. I mean, they're right up on the issues. I mean, they just asked them straight up. And they said to me, well, you know, was everybody ready? And I said, well, look, what we do, and I think people will understand the line you have to draw between, on the one hand, having all the trucks ready too early, which costs money, because some of them are contracted, you know, to outside providers, and having them too late. And they do it based on averages. And the fact is that the date on which they would have the full complement of every single truck and so on available would be around the 15th of November, and then with a further complement on December the 1st. So this was, as you were saying here on 1010 this morning, the earliest snowfall of its kind in 70 years.
Yeah,
so the answer is not 100% of the material, the equipment was available. But I also heard on the same radio station callers and commentators saying that a good job was done clearing the streets. So what they did was they kind of put the 5-alarm fire on, you know, when it was apparent this was going to be a bigger snowfall, and got more than the 75% of the trucks that were actually scheduled to be available to be available. And you know, when you decide, well, should you change the date to November 1st, it's the same conundrum we face on many things. Yes, you could do that. And then there might be a show on which somebody would phone in to you guys and say, why did they have all those trucks on November the 1st at a huge cost when it never snows between November 1st? And they're all just sitting there and it's costing us money. So you use the averages, you pick the dates you do, and you kind of hope at the beginning and the end of the winter time, you know, because that's, remember we had a couple of years ago, a really, really late storm in the April.
That's right.
By then the contracted trucks had gone back to wherever they go in the summer. And so we've now adjusted that to sort of provide for a contingency. So,
but when you find out on a Friday and it doesn't snow until the Monday, that's a long lead time, is it not?
Yeah, not as simple as you think, though, Ryan. Okay. What you're dealing with is taking people who have trucks, for example, where they might use them for, you can see them, they're trucks that have plows put onto the front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not have had those plows put on the front because the truck's being used for some other purpose. And, you know, it's not as simple as just saying, well, go in and in 10 minutes they'll have the plow put on the front. You know,
I guess just not a lot of people know that.
No. And the drivers are people who may have some other work, but they make themselves available to the city full time. I mean, a lot of people also wouldn't know the drivers of the salt trucks sleep at the salt domes.
What?
They sleep there. Yes, they do.
Because, in what? Well, like in the trucks?
Well, no, there's a place inside those salt domes where there's
there
living accommodations.
Not. They're
absolutely telling you the truth. Well, because if they're being called out at 3 o'clock in the morning to say you got to go salt now because the snow's coming in 2 hours, or put that brine on the street, they have to. They can't be called from home to say,
so
come on
in. So it's like a
in.
Fire hall then.
Well, sort of like that, yes. And so, you know, it isn't as simple as just saying let's, you know, fire up a couple hundred people at short notice. So they did their best, and they did have a couple of days notice of this snow, and they got it cleaned up, I think, reasonably well. And, you know, you're always reexamining these dates, but the historical averages say this was the snowstorm of 70 years. And should you pay to have that kind of coverage for all 70 years, or the 69 out of the 70 when it doesn't happen, at great cost to the taxpayers? And the answer normally is no.
We are getting a lot of text messages from people who live in the riding of Councillor, well, I guess former Councillor Jim Karagiannis. They want to know, will they have representation at City Hall? Will it be a by-election? I know we talked about it a few minutes ago. Is that something you wanted to cover off?
At the council meeting coming up in about 10 days, the seat first has to be officially declared vacant. It's a legal requirement. And then at the same meeting at the end of November, the council will have a decision to make as to whether you have an election or an appointment. And that in part will be influenced by whether he has gone to court. And let's say he's been in court by then, perhaps Mr. Karagiannis, that is, and been successful. So I can't answer the question, but that's the procedure. Okay. Is at the council meeting, declaration of vacancy, and then a decision.
I just want to make sure that we address that for people, because there are constituents. And I
in the meantime, by the way, the clerk supervises Councillor Karagiannis' staff, former Councillor Karagiannis' staff, so they continue to do their job in his office, so they can call what was his office, and his staff will help them. And my office and the clerk's office are also overseeing things to make sure that the needs of those residents in Scarborough are looked after. They wrote me a very straightforward letter saying they needed help with their issues. And I said, of course, I'll be there to provide that help.
You unveiled, well, the city unveiled its new winter services plan when it comes to homeless people. That happened just last week, I think on Wednesday midweek. Of course, we had the first snowfall of the season. We're looking at a plan that also includes a new center for homeless refugees and asylum seekers, nearly 500 new spaces. I look at this and I think this is further proof that the federal government didn't get this right if we don't have places for people who are coming from outside of our borders. I am not against immigration. I'm not against a healthy refugee system, but I want it, and I've always said this on the show, I want to make sure that it's planned so that we don't have people that are out on the streets or out in a system or out in a shelter when they get here. Do you agree with that, that this is an indication of poor planning?
the system needs to be changed further. I will say we've had some support from the federal government to help us with the cost of housing the asylum claimants and people that are coming to Toronto as refugees. But the trickle of people, when I say trickle, it's a steady trickle, continues. We're getting about, I think, about 80 a week. And so what that means is some of them are getting housed, but it still means that about close to 40% of our entire shelter capacity is taken up by people who are refugees or asylum claimants. And they're waiting for their hearing. They're waiting to have a hearing. But the trouble is there's like an 18-month backlog for hearings. So I've spoken directly to the Prime Minister about it since the election, mm-hmm. and just indicated this is a very significant continuing concern, and that we need their financial help and also need their help in perhaps redirecting some of these refugees, which they gave us some money to help do, by the way. So to say, okay, well, there's a job for you in Kitchener, or there's a place for you in Sudbury where housing is more readily available and a job. And so we now have some money and we're doing that. That's a job the provincial government might have been expected to do normally, but they've sort of said they're washing their hands of this and they just don't want to be involved with these people that they describe otherwise than as asylum claimants, which is what they are. Under our charter, when you land on Canadian soil, you have the right to go and have a hearing about your status, and they won't deport you until you've had that hearing. And the problem is that the hearings aren't happening fast enough.
To the average person listening, though, I mean, it does fuel the argument to the other side of people who are against this type of system in the first place, where we say, where they say, if we can't house our own, we've got a homeless problem, we've got shelters and homeless shelters, they can't house the people that are here, why are we bringing people in? It does add argument.
But that's the only point that wasn't the correct description is we're not bringing them in. They're setting foot on Canadian soil.
That's right.
And the minute any human being sets foot on Canadian soil, they're subject to what we call due process. In other words, before anybody can tell you have to leave, even though you have no status, that's why they call them, irregular or asylum claimants, you are entitled to a hearing under our Charter of Rights. So the problem is very simply with how long it takes to get that hearing. I think the guarantee in their program is that it's supposed to take 3 months or something, and it's taking 2 years.
You could also make the argument the problem is not only how long it's taking, which I agree with you on, but where they are housed. The idea that they're able to come to cities and then it's the strain put on cities, mainly the big cities, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, that seems unfair. There might be some sort of way in the process that you can change it so that they're housed somewhere federally, maybe on federal land, to make sure that they go through the process that way.
It's very interesting you say that, because at one point a year ago or so, there was a proposal to have a place near Cornwall somewhere, mm-hmm. which is close to the Quebec-Ontario border, where that's exactly what would happen. You would have people put up there. Now, the disadvantage to that is that those people can't work, because in many cases, these asylum claimants actually get jobs fairly quickly and support themselves and find housing out of the shelter system. So a lot of them are more successful than you'd think and at being able to work while they wait for their hearing. But the fact is they're still waiting way too long for these hearings. But your idea has been canvassed, and for some reason or other, the federal government decided not to proceed.
Well, because it's a good idea, that's why.